Hi there, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode Moorcrofts Means Business podcast. And for those of you who don't know by now, Moorcrofts are a law firm based in the Thames Valley, and we specialise in corporate work, commercial and technology, commercial property and employment law. And my name is Matt Jenkin. I'm the partner and I head up the employment law team at Moorcrofts. And in this episode, we're looking at the topic of the importance of strategic planning for businesses. Now, I know that's something a lot of businesses are looking at, particularly as we're coming out of the start of the new year now, aren't we? But probably the top of businesses' agenda was a bit of strategic planning as they were looking at what was happening for this year. And to discuss this topic, I'm delighted to be joined today by John Fairley of JFP Strategic Planning. Now, John has been actively involved in many types and sizes of SMEs, and he uses his successful business and military careers to help businesses clear the decks and to rediscover their focus and direction. And in short, and I love this for John's kind of byline on LinkedIn, he helps businesses get things done, which I think is great for strategic planning. And when he's not doing that, John is planning all sorts of adventures. I think he's just recently walked the West Highland Way, managed to sample a few whiskies, I think maybe at the end of that. And if that's not energetic enough, I think he's planning some kind of trip to Everest Base Camp. So he is a full-on action man, I would say. But I'll let John speak for himself. So welcome, John.
Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, John. Thanks so much for joining us today to talk about strategic planning, which I know is at the heart, really, of what your business does for its client. I always think with strategic planning, a good starting point. So for you, what makes a good strategic plan?
Very good question. I think, first of all, if you're going to do a strategic plan, you've got to keep it very simple. We are dealing in SME, not as big corporates. So it's important document and design the document for your own benefit. It's not there for other people's benefit. And it's not a self-critique either. But the important thing about it, when you produce it, whatever you produce, try and make sure that the document is what I would describe as action-led. So everything you do or everything you talk about, there should be something comes out of it in terms of an action. And a good plan will also acknowledge differences of opinion. Because if you can think about it, it's not quite the same for a one-man band, one-man ownership. But if you've got two or three directors, it is quite likely you're going to have a definite difference of opinion on a number of subjects. Now, it could be business differences, or it could even be emotional differences. But the important thing about getting a simple, good strategic plan out there is it airs all the concerns, thoughts, so that when you have agreed what the final plan is, you're all moving ahead, knowing where the knowing how the others feel about it. You avoid things like conflict as you move down the line, and you avoid surprise.
Yeah, it's interesting. You started with making it simple, because my experience of some businesses' strategic plans is they're very glossy, but they're really long. And I think the longer they are, the more difficult it becomes to deliver. And is that, in terms of a good strategic plan, is that something that should be capable of being shared across the business? It shouldn't just be something that's board focused. It should be written in a way that can communicate the shop floor.
The advantage of having a good plan is that it allows you to then disseminate down the chain, not necessarily all the detail, but the general direction, way ahead, the key points of the plan. And I think what's really important about that is it does help motivate people, because no matter who you are, whether you're sitting bored, and can I just say, we use this wonderful term bored, it sounds terribly highfalutin. Actually, a board is one, two, or even three people sitting around the table having a common sense meeting. That's all it is. There's nothing fancy about it. But I do think the whole idea of the plan from the board level downwards, you empower staff. They know what's coming down the line. But sometimes you make decisions in business which are quite tough decisions. And if the staff, and indeed the management, are not aware of the context with which they can get quite grumpy about the whole. So again, it's just making sure that if you have to make a difficult decision, or one that is could be construed as illogical, it's got a context behind it. And it's that, I think, in itself is very useful. And it gives staff security, not in the real sense of security, but mentally. You know, it's nice to know that you're part of a business that's thinking forward and ahead. It makes you feel more comfortable.
Oh, indeed. I can see why a well thought through plan can be used quite as a powerful engagement tool for employees. You know, it gives them that feeling of why they're there. And John, I guess this is a challenge which probably you face a lot of the time when speaking to clients and prospects and things like that, is, you know, this view that strategic plans are only for big business, that for the SMEs, as you say, you know, we talk about a board, it's maybe a team of managers having a meeting. You know, it doesn't have to be a formal kind of company's house board meeting. But I think I know what you're going to say when I say, are they only for big businesses? But how do you kind of push back on that for those who have that view?
Well, the bottom line is, you know, big corporates have these massive plans, you know, and they research them, they take months. You know, I've got a colleague who does it for larger businesses, and you know, he can spend 6 or 7 months working out a plan.
Wow.
And it doesn't make it any better than the plan that I do with smaller business. So there is always a relevance to have a plan. But as I said earlier on, you've got to try and keep it short and sharp and to the point. But I think I said earlier on, make it a plan to suit you. Obviously, if you're going to create one of the big strengths, it does give you clarity of thought. Whenever you put things on paper, it does force you to think carefully, or more carefully, about what you're doing. So, I think one's just got to try, make the thing work for you. Yeah?
Yeah.
So just one point I just remembered. The other thing about you saying, is it suitable for small business as well as big business? The other point I'd make about plan, if you are thinking in the medium to long term about selling a business or even raising funds, it is quite important to have a document that is plausible. So, you know, I'm not literally talking about back to a fact. You do have to write something down that makes sense. So, and again, this is sit down with others. You can challenge each other and make sure that your assumptions can be justified moving forward. But the answer is, it's not just for big business, it's definitely for small business.
You know, I know from talking with you in the past, that idea that businesses should just ignore it because it's that they think they're too small is one that you would actively challenge. And I think you talked about, John, one of the benefits there of kind of bringing that clarity of thought to a business. When you're talking to people about business planning, about strategic planning, what are the other benefits that you're emphasizing to clients as to what they'll kind of see out of this process?
I've already, I think, mentioned the idea of board buy-in. I never like that buy-in, but it is very important that once you've all sat around a table, thrashed something out, you then have buy-in. It may not be what I describe as 100% buy-in, it's 100% buy-in to the objectives or the actions. You may have differences on other issues, but that's fine, out in the open. The other important thing is about the empowerment of management. It does allow you, I think, to set a bar to encourage management at all levels to make decisions. My experience, one of the biggest problems is that owners or directors, they can tend to not quite micromanage, but manage too tightly. Don't let managers get on, and I have to be honest, make the mistake. Good management make very few mistakes. Yeah, but in allowing people that freedom of thought and action, you will find you'll get a much better performance. I mean, I've got one example of a recent client who did a management buyout, and difference in the environment that the new owner created was enormous. And it was because he had a clear plan, he laid it out to everybody what he was trying to do, and he emphasized that he wanted to empower everybody. It really did change the atmosphere, and I can assure you, changed the performance of the business. I think the last point I'd like to make on the, you know, what are the benefits, allows everybody to challenge each other without conflict. You know, it's a great thing, able to air your feelings, air your view. I mean, for example, at the beginning of a planning session, I will also sat around, I will ask them the very same question, but on a personal level, not literally personal, but things like salary and their objectives in life are. Now, some people say, well, that's being very sort of well, too personal in a business environment. It's actually not. If you think about it, if you've got people trying to run a business together, it's important that you know how each of you think and what the pressures are on you, whether it be financial, yep, or personal. But, you know, you just understand where everybody's coming from. So there really are a lot of very good benefits.
That issue that, around challenging people without creating kind of conflict, I think is really interesting because, yeah. As you know, kind of where I sit with employment law, conflict, you know, we try and avoid wherever possible. But actually, you do have to have opportunities where I think managers get the opportunity and business owners get the opportunity to challenge each other. And I think if that can be done within a kind of framework where actually there's something positive that comes out of it. Yeah. And also like the idea when you, suppose it feeds that board buy-in. What you're, I think what you were saying was that it's not that you're necessarily everyone's going to agree to every single point, but there'll be a consensus reached, and that process of reaching a consensus allows people to kind of get behind it. It's not kind of imposed on people that this is, you know, this it's my way or the highway.
Yeah,
people can have differences of opinion within it.
And can I just throw in there, when you understand what other people's views are, concerns, whatever they may be, when you yourself are actually operating in the business environment, you understand more about how people think and how they react to certain topics, issues, whatever. And it does allow you to manage the way you handle or deal with certain people. It's not highfalutin stuff. You know, it's just being conscious, you know, of people around you. And I think one of the telling points I often get made to me when I'm sitting on a board is consists of one particular business which I've looked after for a long time and merged, demerged, and acquired over a quite a long period. But from the very outset, when we merged and demerged, we acquired another director. And the interesting thing, he said after a couple of years, so it's a long time, but a couple of years, he said, the great thing about board meetings that now attends is that he knows what's coming down the line, no surprises. There may be difficult questions to be addressed, but there is very little chance of conflict. In his previous, he said, board meetings were, well, they occasionally happen, but they did happen, there often wasn't appropriate agenda, and they always end up in arguments. Now, you cannot run a business like that. And it may sound very simple, get an agenda and lay it out, do it on a regular basis, so monthly, bi-monthly, whatever. But it's surprising how many people just don't do it, because it does take a bit of time, a bit of discipline to prepare for this thing. I think it's incredibly valuable to be able to do it.
I think that planning element's crucial, isn't it? I think we've all seen examples, haven't we, of management meetings where it's a meeting for the sake of it and there's no focus or structure to it. And I think that applies equally to when the time that you're paying and the attention you're paying to your own business. So John, hopefully people listening are kind of can now see the benefits of that sort of strategic plan. What do you see as kind of the main ingredients of a strategic plan? What do you think, what would you typically expect to see cover?
Well, first of all, I say go on online, Google it, you can get all kinds of lists of things in a strategic plan. I said at the beginning, keep it simple. Yeah. So it's got to be something that fits your requirement. And I've got a few little headings which I can just walk through very quickly. But the first one is always get on the table people's personal debt, what they are, what each person in front of everybody, so that each person is eye to eye and saying how they think, how they person. Then I would get the same people to then extol their business objective. Not the personal objectives, the business objectives. Again, that can be very interesting because people often don't realize how risk averse their fellow directors are. And you find that by asking these sort of questions. Once you have got the personal and business objectives out, it's quite easy to pull together a list of what I would call strategic objectives. Now, if you were a big corporate man, you expect to spend, you know, months researching objectives are. In my mind, objectives are common sense things. I mean, some of them are what are proper business oriented, but often it is common sense what you want the business to do. And it does come out from talking about your personal business objectives. So if you can then, at this point, end up with a few strategic objectives that you all agree with, and going back to, you know, some you would not agree, that's fine. So you just leave them to one side, and you can almost call them issues. Yeah, but you all agree what the objectives are. Having done that, you then say, right, here's the objective. Let's agree what scale we want to take the business to those objectives. And as you're going through that exercise, you will often come across glaring points where the objective and scale of the business don't meet. So it's a good point to iron out which side do you move to? Yeah, the objective or the scale of the business. You then take a wee look at the marketing, and you don't try and create a marketing plan. All you do is look at the marketing issues that you think need to be addressed as you go forward. And then once you've done that, you can then say, right, what the size of staffing we need to agree the size of the business. And again, it's a very simple task. In fact, I'm going to go back, sorry to jump back. When I talk about scaling it, any good owner of a business knows what will have a good feeling what he can achieve. So there's no need to do tons of research into what scale of business you want. You can literally be saying, I want a 5% uplift, or I want 10% uplift, whatever it is. Bear in mind that you can go back after you've done your planning and check some of these assumptions to make sure that they all make sense. But the important thing is, at the end of those little headings I've just gone through, you will have a lot of figures. And what you really should do is, at the end of that, put them together into a P&L. Now, that obviously, not an accountant, but it's a bit of an exercise to put together a P&L. But the reason it's important to create a P&L from what you've been discussing is a reality check. And with the best will in the world, you know, some of the best ideas, when you get it down to crunching the numbers, you suddenly realize, it's not quite what we thought it was. And I had one client where we actually were forecasting £25 million turnover. Now, on paper, that was fine. But actually, you shouldn't realize that, you know, we're well off track for a number of reasons. Good reasons, by the way. We weren't being airy-fairy. So the reality check of the financials was awful. But at the end of all that, talking, reality check, the one thing you have at the end of it is a set of action, a set of objectives. That's all you need from that plan. You had mentioned earlier on about glossy booklets and all the rest of it. Actually, all you need is two pages, a page of action and a page of objectives, because that is what the plan was all about in the first place. And that's what you move forward. And from that point, you then get into the implementation. And I hate to say it, but the implementation, as I think most people realize, is the hardest part of it. Right? Planning, thinking, that's the easy part of it. It is definitely.
I agree. It always brings me back to it, sitting in marketing meetings in firm I worked for previously, and we would spend a lot of time talking about marketing plans, much to the frustration of one of the partners, who would eventually just say, look, can we just do something rather than just talking about it? Can we do it? And I think you're right, is that once you have that plan, you've actually got to implement it. John, one interesting bit that I just wanted to touch on with you is, yeah, you talked about that reality check for yeah, businesses. Do you think it's helpful for businesses to have some kind of external, almost kind of a non-exec sitting on the board to help with that sort of challenging the reality check?
I'm glad you've asked. I was actually going to try and raise that. I think all businesses should have some kind of non-exec. Now, non-exec, yet again, it's a terminology. It's someone who sits with owner or the directors and acts like a wingman and sits on the outside, sees what's going on, and he can pick up the vibe between people who are on the board. He can also, from experience, having worked with other businesses in probably in other areas, in my case, lots of different types of industry, you can tell which ideas might and might not work. So a non-exec is a bit like a sports coach. I mean, can someone explain to me why all the top sports people, football, rugby, athletes, Winter Olympics now, they all have coaches. What is a coach? A coach is nothing more than a non-exec. It's someone who's sitting out there watching, trying to point, trying to direct. And a non-exec can be sitting around and actually contribute very little for 2 or 3 months. And all of a sudden, the non-exec comes into his own on a specific area or comes up with ideas. But what they do bring to the table, I do think, bring a lot of experience, bring a lot of knowledge, and they can bring a lot of objectivity as well. So yes, a non-exec, I think, is really useful, particularly on a one-man board. If you think about it, you're one man. It's quite lonely. You know, we've all been there. And it's nice if someone you talk to discuss business.
I agree. I can see the value of, as you say, I think sometimes the label non-executive director, people get gained for, you know, very large-scale businesses. That has a very kind of, perhaps a more formal connotation.
Yeah.
But I like the way, you know, that kind of analogy of a coach. It's someone to support you. And perhaps to call businesses out a little bit on, they are being unrealistic around projections or perhaps the market or something like that, that you act as that reality check.
Yeah, and the other thing about a non-exec is they do bring this external view. And I'm going to use the right words as an analogy. One of my clients is looking for a new operations director. The business is engineering, quite a dangerous engineering business. And you thought, oh, well, we're going to have a top-class engineer, etc. We actually took on a guy who was an ops manager for Ocado.
Okay.
No engineering background whatsoever. But he brought to the table, he had all the skills. He didn't have the engineering. That could be covered by someone else. But he always had all the skills that really needed to pull the operation together. And he also had a different view of how things happen. And it's been a huge success. I'm not saying, by the way, that will work every time in all business. But a non-exec is a bit like that. Bring a non-exec in. There are certain businesses, I do believe, that having a non-exec with experience in the industry is very useful. But I think the Georgian non-execs bring freshness, new ideas to the table, and that's what they're there for, not to simply peddle the old beliefs, all the rest of it.
I can see the advantage. So perhaps, John, just finishing up, and I'm sure this has got the interest of lots of people listening, or it should do, because it's going to have a major positive impact on their business. So what are your kind of top tips for a business who's looking at drawing up a strategic plan? You know, obviously I'll put John's details and people can link in with you, but have you got a couple of top tips for people?
Well, I've got to say, in terms of top tips, first of all, do have a plan. Secondly, have a very clear plan of how to implement. And I'm really going to push this point about implementation. It is the hardest, and it takes quite a lot of drive, sometimes a bit of courage, to push it through, because you can go off in all kinds of directions. So I do feel, and I don't wish to make it too simple, but a simple plan, then a determination to actually implement the plan. Because I often get involved with clients, and before I start, I always say, look, I'm very happy to produce a plan with you, but actually, you're wasting your money if you're not prepared to say at the end of it, I'm going to make sure it's implemented. Because I find it, I must admit, it frustrates the idea of someone to take a plan, stick it in a drawer, and thank you very much, I feel better. All right? Makes no difference to the business. None.
No, I think those are to have a plan and actually implement it. It sounds simple, but we both know that it actually delivering on both those aspects can be very difficult. I think for those businesses who are prepared to put the effort in coming up with that agile plan and then are prepared to put the effort in to implement it, I think they'll see the benefits. And that's up. Thanks so much, John, for covering what I think will be a really interesting topic, hopefully for those people who are listening in. And I know you and the team at JFP are putting out lots of articles and blogs on your website and through LinkedIn with some really interesting nuggets of information for people. I'll put a link to John's LinkedIn profile and hopefully people will connect with you direct. John, just leaves me to say thank you so much for contributing today. I've really enjoyed it. As always, when we have our conversations, remember not to talk about England getting beaten by Scotland in the rugby, which is very gracious of you. And hopefully people will link in with you and start looking at plans and putting them into action. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Cheers,
thanks,
Matt.